Hey, welcome to Coffee Break on the podcast. I'm Neil Damgaard, www.coffeebreak.com.
Wrong.
What is our neildamgaard.com? That's what it is. We welcome you to the Coffee Break podcast today. And so, Bob, with my best possible voice, full of calmness and mirth and joy and patience, we come to a topic today that's near and dear to my heart. It's the subject of voice. And I am interested in voice. I don't know how many other people are interested in it or pay a lot of attention to it, but I want to talk about the role that voice has in our lives. And you have a nice voice, by the way. Has anybody ever told you that?
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, Mickey.
And I didn't believe this at first, but I think I have a pretty decent voice. But if I'm speaking off the cuff, I have a horrible voice.
Why?
Because I and...
You hesitate.
I hesitate, although I have read that that is actually a sign of an intelligent speaker, because they're thinking...
You're being careful.
Being careful.
Okay.
So I'll buy that.
Okay. Well, I think you have a nice, just biologically a nice voice. And, as you know, your wife, Renee, has a fabulous voice.
Yes.
And I think that's
the reason I married her.
Well, I tell you, I can understand that. My wife has a really nice voice, too, and I have loved her voice all the years that I've known her. In fact, that was an attraction, and she has a very soft voice. Now, as a teacher, my wife is a math teacher, and as a teacher, her voice does not serve her in the same way that some teachers who can really raise their voice. She does not yell at people well. And I, of course, have always appreciated that. But she has a very soft-spoken voice, but I love her voice. And I think it's an interesting subject because it's so much a part of our lives. And but before we get much further into this podcast, let me just ask you, do you think it is an important topic on any level?
The topic of voice and discussing voice?
Yeah.
I think it's an interesting topic. I think it's important to people who want to develop their voice. I think voice is much more important than most people who hadn't thought about it would, after they did think about it, would understand that it is a very important topic.
Did you like George W. Bush's voice?
His voice?
Didn't think about it.
I didn't think about it before.
How about a Barack Obama's voice?
No.
You don't like his voice.
I don't like anything about
Bob. Well, just his voice now, just the voice.
Well, he's got a very calm voice, and I know during the election, I don't know if it was the first one. I mean, women were actually swooning when he spoke.
As a crooner.
Yeah.
Like Frank Sinatra, almost.
I think that there are some voices, some men, some women, who can mesmerize a crowd or appeal to a crowd just for the fact that they don't raise their voice. Because I think we hear a lot of people who do raise their voice.
Right.
And when you get someone, especially a powerful person, who appears to be calm, it's a...
How about Clint Eastwood?
No, I mean, I've never really thought about his voice.
I think about his voice because he's generally, in his motion pictures, he is generally a character that's of some threat.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, as male actors go, I've always felt he has a very soft-spoken voice. But he has that sort of grumbly, growly, you know, make my day.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of voice, and it how he handles his voice, even in much more recent movies, films, Gran Torino comes to mind, and this latest movie that he made, I can't remember the name of it, but that voice is signature,
mm-hmm.
and I like his voice, but it's how he manages it. It's very threatening, although it's quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Then you get a really annoying voice like Jack Nicholson. Mm-hmm. You know, and everybody can tell his, and he's probably one of the most imitated voices in Hollywood that I can think of. But I the more I think about voice, the more important I come to believe that it is in our culture, not in standout ways, but in how we make choices. Music. Mm-hmm. Who's a female singer you love to hear her voice that comes to mind? I'll give you a second to think on that.
Yeah.
There must be some.
I'm really.
So mad. Okay, let me stimulate your thinking on this because I have a YouTube, you know how we make playlists, mm-hmm. and I have a playlist of 1970s female voices.
Okay, well,
I think that's the decade of the female.
Well,
voice.
I mean Linda Ronstadt.
Linda Ronstadt, incredible right. voice.
Yes.
Yeah, it's which sad is, that she's lost gone. Her yeah. voice. Yeah, with Parkinson's, very sad. Yeah. She says she can't sing a note now. That's really sad. But from the 70s, Linda Ronstadt. Mm-hmm. Karen Carpenter.
Oh,
give
yeah.
Give me a break.
Yeah, yeah.
Is there a finer voice? Marilyn McCoo.
Yeah, okay.
You know? Very unusual, stately, dignified kind of voice that you just mm-hmm. loved. I mean, but then there's a lot of other singers that we could talk about. And, of course, people, they trade on their voice and... there are so many. I mean, I always loved Judy Collins.
Oh yeah,
as a singer.
Yeah.
That's late 60s.
Yeah.
You know, more 60s than I suppose yeah. 70s too. But so there's music, there's public speaking, but just on a more mundane level, what are the things that we notice about people's voices?
There are people's voices that, like you had mentioned, that you recognize right away. You know, Clint Eastwood's, of course, to me, one of my favorite voices, and not because he played the voice of Darth Vader, but even before that, James Earl Jones, who's got a wonderful voice, probably
amazing
the best
voice
in the industry.
Yes.
Of people who've ever spoken on planet
incredible
Earth.
Incredible voice.
He's just
yes.
got a great voice.
He really does.
And
you're from the 60s.
I'm from the 60s.
No, that's a James Earl Jones line in Field of Dreams.
Oh.
When Kevin Costner comes to the door and trying to interview him and talk to him, you know, you're from the 60s. It's very funny, but he's got a great voice.
Yeah. And it's recognizable. And people, I have never heard anyone ever say they didn't like his voice.
Right.
There are British... people who have a good voice. One of the nobody's going to remember this guy, Alistair Cook. He used to
host something, didn't he?
Masterpiece Theater
okay.
back in the early 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
Very distinguished British voice. That people listen to. Then you get people who got very distinctive voices, like Woody Allen, or I mean, you hear it and you know who it is, but they're kind of irritating, kind of, you know.
It's not overly appealing. If Woody Allen was a guy you met on the street, you probably wouldn't want to get into a long conversation with the voice.
Yeah, but then there are some people who have a voice like that are, you know, okay. Yeah,
how about Pee Wee Herman? now, there's a very unique voice.
Yeah.
Paul Rubens is the guy's name, I think.
Right.
Yeah. You know, very, you would identify that voice...
It's been a long time since I heard it, but yeah, I think I would pick it.
Yeah,
yeah. Tiny Tim, another one from the.
Yeah, I mean, so you know, voice since the invention of radio, and then television and film, you know, now we've become immersed and then recording songs and so forth, music. But we've become totally deluged with mm-hmm. all kinds of different voices. Walter Cronkite. I mean, you just
the most trusted man in America.
You know, and why is that? Because of his looks? Well, because of his voice, I think. He just engendered trust.
Yeah. Another great voice was Charlton Heston.
Oh, yeah.
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 And I can't, off the top of my head, other than James Earl Jones... I was trying to think of people whose voices I really, when they speak, and I don't know so much that it is the tone of their voice or the inflection of their voice. Sometimes it's what you're saying that captivates you. I remember one time years ago I was in the service, and there was this Japanese guy, young guy. He was a friend of somebody that was on the station with me, and he was talking something. I don't even remember what the topic was, but it was about science and philosophy, and he had me captive for about 3 hours just listening to what he was saying, because he was just so interesting and animated in the way he was talking about what he was talking about. So I think all those things, voice by itself, yeah, you get like the James Earl Jones type, but when you combine that with gestures and enthusiasm and all that, it just...
So there's, you know, if we could break it down, we could say that there's the tone of voice that you said, an inflection. Mm-hmm. There's speed.
Mm-hmm.
Many times when a young preacher starts out, he speaks way too fast.
Mm-hmm.
He speaks faster than because he's nervous and he wants to get through his material.
Mm-hmm.
Then the people can hear him.
Yeah.
You know, you need to give people time to catch up with what you're saying. I've really, people don't even know this, but over my ministry, I think I've slowed down quite a bit. If I've got a point, I'm rising to a crescendo in a message, a sermon, and I want to really hammer a point, I'll say it and then stop and let people catch up, you know. So there's speed with speaking or singing. I'm interested sort of in an intellectual way, and not really in an emotional way, with hip-hop and rap. Because the number of lyrics in a typical hip hop song is amazingly long. They're telling a story, and it's far longer than, I mean, it's 12 times longer than a Beatles song, the lyrics. And it's amazing that someone could memorize that many words and then say/sing them, whatever you call rap or hip hop. But the voice that goes along with it invariably is very distinct. And you may not like it, or you may like it. But even beyond just the content, just listening to and sort of paying attention to the number of words and the way. Of course, it's very, very rhythmic, you know, and very, what's the word? You know, just rhymed. There's a lot of rhyming. I couldn't do that. I couldn't write that kind of material, you know. But it's interesting from the standpoint of voice. And then, of course, there's vocabulary.
Mm-hmm.
Voice is defined as to its value, probably by what we're saying. If I use the phrase pissed off, are you offended?
No.
If I use the phrase ticked off, are you offended?
No.
Teed off?
No.
So I don't ever even say teed off, by the way, and I rarely say ticked off. I might say it from the pulpit, but I love the phrase pissed off. You know why?
Why?
Because, thank you for asking, Bob. As my co-host from, by the way, I forgot to mention, South Coast Multimedia, Edward Bob Perrin, joining me today. I love the phrase pissed off because it pisses people off. And I love to do that. I mean, and it just says what people, if you use that phrase, everybody knows exactly what you're saying.
Right.
I mean, we as Christians, we probably would prefer a more delicate, careful term like annoyed, perturbed, you know, agitated, think words like that. But if I say, I pissed you off, didn't I? You know exactly what I mean.
Right.
So I don't know what my point is with that, except that
you just wanted to say it.
I just wanted to say it. And we did a podcast on language,
right,
and
right.
Cussing and swearing. Yeah.
But that would offend some people.
Yeah.
Even though it would not offend me.
As soon as I say that, some people just shut down.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what else I'm going to say. I've lost them as an audience.
Yeah.
Or in a conversation. I would never use that phrase with certain people, you know. But with you, it's okay, you know.
Okay.
I just find vocabulary interesting too. And I've been watching, and we've spoken of this before, as sort of a running part of our conversation, Bob, about shows that we're watching on Netflix or on Amazon Prime or wherever we're watching things. And I just finished the three-episode series, Guess Which Country developed this series with three episodes as a whole season.
England?
Yeah, you know it's England. Anyway, it's called The Heavy Water War, and it's brilliant. It's wonderful. Mm-hmm. And the whole, and almost, I'd say half of the series is in German with subtitles and Norwegian.
Mm-hmm.
A good bit of Norwegian, actually. And then the other series that I'd mentioned to you was Occupied, which is a Norwegian series.
I watched that one, yeah.
I love listening to that language. Yeah. I don't have a clue what they're saying if there's not subtitles, but I love how the inflection works. The dynamics of conversation with it. German is ridiculously long for the words they use, you know. Gruppenführer, you know, which means boss, basically.
Gruppenführer.
You know. I just love listening to the voices.
Yeah.
Yeah. So would you go to a church? And this is purely speculative. You know, you listen to the music, you listen to the preacher do his sermon, and you come away, you and your wife, you come away saying, you know, that was really a good sermon. I appreciated the content. I appreciated the length of the sermon. It wasn't too long. It wasn't too short. I appreciated the passion the guy had. But, man, his voice drives me nuts. I don't know that I could listen to that every week. Have you ever had that sense? Have you ever even thought about that? Because I think about that all the time.
Yeah. I have. I don't. I can't recall ever that being, everything else being great and the person's voice irritating me that much. I suppose if, you know, someone had like a effeminate voice or a lispy voice, and, you know, regardless of how...
Right on.
Everything else was. That would probably irritate me a little bit. But I can't recall ever, you know.
You know, in recent years in my own preaching, I've become aware that I'm yelling more. Mm-hmm. Not yelling at people. I can't stand that, so I wouldn't do that. And, you know, it's like I'm yelling at you for whatever. Not that. Just my dynamic gets louder, and it's like I'm talking to somebody who's not even in the room, like I'm talking to the culture, or I'm talking to the liberals, or I'm talking to, you know, I have this running conversation with somebody that's not even there out there, and that's part of my shtick. But my voice goes up, my volume intensifies, and I sound annoyed. And that's a thing that I don't think I consciously decided to start doing, but I'm noticing I'm doing it. And frankly, I think it turns some people off.
I have a thought on this, because I normally am a very soft-spoken person. As a matter of fact, I have people complain a lot of times they can't hear me because I speak softly. But I can speak loudly, and I do. And a lot of times it's with family members, and I think it's a frustration out of frustration when you feel like you are saying something, or as a leader, you're a leader of a church, I'm a leader of a family, you're a leader of a family, when you say something and it goes unheard, so you want them to hear it, so you repeat it rather loudly to get people to, you know, to make
acknowledge
sure
acknowledge it. Yeah.
And of course, once you've done that, you've kind of lost them, because they think you're a prude.
Now the fact that you did that,
he's such a violent man.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, family has got to be the arena where a voice takes on a lot more importance. You know, if we use sarcasm, people can pick that up. I, of course, am never sarcastic. But they pick up on that really quickly. You
know? Yeah, I think sarcasm has a bad rap.
You're a fan of sarcasm.
I love sarcasm. I am really good at it.
Oh, that's funny.
And when people say how bad it is, I'm like,
I've based my whole life on
That's funny. You're a sick man, Bob. And that's maybe why I like you so much. Because I find, you know, I grew up in a home that was, it's interesting, because I don't know that I've ever even thought about this much, but I grew up in a home where there was a lot of violent emotion and, you know, extreme opinions and yelling. And there was never any question about where anybody stood or anything. But I don't remember my parents ever being sarcastic. Mm-hmm. It just wasn't in there. I don't know if my dad's military training or my mom's Southern culture restraint. You didn't speak that way. They spoke a lot of other ways that were inappropriate, but they never. Mm-hmm. I didn't grow up with sarcasm at all. It wasn't until I started watching Laugh-In and Marx Brothers.
Yeah.
That I started to, Marx Brothers are like dripping with sarcasm. Yeah. They're very funny, but, you know, I grew to love that way of communicating. But that's partly about voice.
Yeah, and it's not fun to be the recipient of or the object of sarcasm. But when you're in a group of people and there is someone who's not there, a politician perhaps that everyone agrees they don't like, and then everybody loves it then. Everybody laughs.
I mean, they do. It's funny.
You think of Don Rickles. I mean, this guy based his whole shtick on sarcasm.
Yeah, with facial expression to go along with it. Yeah, probably one of my favorite sarcastic expressions of all time is Steve Martin. Well, excuse me. I went around saying that for years, you know, imitating Steve Martin. But, you know, that's largely a destructive use of voice, I suppose. I was talking to somebody earlier today, and I was paying attention. I was remembering a video, a five-minute video I watched that anybody can see. It's Hitler speaking, I think it was 1936, to a huge crowd of teenagers in either Munich or Nuremberg, one or the other, in a giant Hitler Youth rally, and it was before membership in the Hitler Youth became compulsory, because I think it was after 1938, if you were a young person in Germany, you had to join the Hitler Youth, and this was pre that time. So this stadium is filled with 50,000 teenagers that are all there because they pretty much want to be there, listening to Hitler, and he's, of course, introduced by this person and that person that do 5 minutes each, and then the Führer gets up and speaks, and the people go nuts. The young people just go absolutely batty. And you read the subtitles to this little speech, 5-6 minute speech that he gives. He says absolutely nothing. You know, there's no meaning in it. He's just speaking, and you're listening to his voice, and his voice makes you crazy. Now, as Americans, we would listen to that voice, and it's horrible. Mm-hmm. But he made his whole thing on voice. Yeah. You know, the ideas, of course, were exploiting the times and the feelings of the German people and all of that. Mm-hmm. But he really used his voice in a way that people loved.
Yeah,
that's interesting. You know,
yeah. Not to turn the topic any, but I mean, speaking of someone who has a really bad voice, is Donald Trump.
I mean, he does not have a pleasant voice to my ear either. No, yeah, no. And, yeah. And his tone of voice, he's sarcastic a lot. Yeah. Yeah, that's what turns a lot of people off, I think. But he's not opposing a candidate who has a nice voice either.
No, no. And I think that same, again, I don't want to turn the subject, but I think people appreciate the fact that he's just so blunt. It's not hurt him at all. I think people are tired of that. They want to hear a voice. They want to have a voice. And I think for a lot of people, Donald Trump is that voice.
I agree. Yeah. I think he brings an appeal to a large number of people. Yeah. We'll see how it spins out. Yeah. But just purely on voice alone, you know, I used to like to listen to, who was the senator from Connecticut that was Democratic? Jewish senator, Joe Lieberman.
Oh, no.
That's who I'm thinking of. No, I'm thinking of Lieberman. Uh-huh. What a great voice he had, a very deep and sort of patient, patronly kind of voice, and I just like listening to him as a politician. I'm sure there's other politicians I never minded Gerald Ford's voice. Mm-hmm. I kind of always liked that sort of football player, hey, let's gather around and let's get this done thing, you know, sort of approach, you know, especially following Nixon. Everybody hated his voice. Mm-hmm. And LBJ had a very Southern voice, which brings me to another question, not an anecdote. When I was in seminary and we were doing practice preaching quite a bit, and we had to go to the lab, so to speak, and listen to cassette messages of different preachers, and then there was a form you filled out that you listened to this guy's message, and what did you think of this aspect or that aspect? And I'll never forget that one of my favorite preachers, who was a seminary professor, his name was Lewis Johnson, or Dr. S. Lewis Johnson, much loved and much appreciated, and we had to listen to one of his sermons on a tape and then assess it. And one of the questions was, what did you think of his voice? Mm-hmm. Was his voice a distraction to his message? And Dr. Johnson was from Alabama, and he had a very Southern drawl, charming voice. He knew how to play the charm up big time. In the third strophe of the 14th verse, you know, and you just like listening. I like listening to that, but if you were probably from New England at the time, you would have hated that, you know. But that was pointed out as a thing to pay attention to in preachers.
Right. I was thinking, well, one of the preachers, I haven't listened to him for a while, but I used to listen to him on the radio and cassettes. That's how long ago it was since I listened to him. Alistair Begg.
Yeah, British.
Scottish.
Scottish, yeah. Excuse me.
So,
Scottish.
Yeah. So he, and he just, it was just the accent. They just, and he
was pleasant.
Know, it was pleasant to listen to.
Yeah. And, Martin Lloyd-Jones, if you've ever listened to any Martin Lloyd-Jones, deep, just a sort of a British, you know, kind of scholarly, dignified. Right. Martin Lloyd-Jones could have quoted Cheech and Chong, and I wouldn't even have. I would have been charmed.
Yeah.
You know, just by listening to him speak.
Yeah. And one thing that we haven't talked about too much about, you know, we've talked about the voice, how it sounds in your to people, you know, but. I'm becoming more and more convinced about this. I think I've talked to you about this. I don't know if we talked about it on a podcast or if it was afterwards, but if you, one of the things a lot of people do, when I preached at the church a while back, and any time I've spoken in public, it's kind of an icebreaker. I always let people know, you know, how nervous. I've heard a lot of people do this, or they're nervous, you know, and I'm thinking now that you probably lose a lot of people
by, if you tell them up front
that you're nervous,
that I'm not comfortable being here.
Right. I think you lose a lot of people.
That's a good point. That's an excellent point.
Yeah. When you go in there, and even if you fake it, and I'm not suggesting you're falsifying something, but people like to listen to someone who they think is an expert or thinks. They
or at least has confidence.
What they are talking about and has confidence.
Yes.
And speaking in front of a camera is for me has been a revelation and a kind of a real exercise, because I'm not going off the cuff. It's scripted. I can say it. I can use it in right inflection because I've rehearsed it, and I sound a lot better than I really am, you know. And I think when.
That's interesting. That's an interesting exercise to go through when you say, I've rehearsed it. You know, does that make it inauthentic just because it's not spontaneous? And I would have to say, not necessarily. I mean, if it's an important message, you're doing a video, let's say, and you're putting a lot of time into the whole package, right, not just your voice and the content, but how you appear, how the camera angle, the lighting, all of these different things. And you want it to be as effective as possible. That doesn't make it inauthentic.
No.
That you have scripted. Now, I preach from a manuscript. Mm-hmm. I write a text prose manuscript. I've always done that. I learned to do that from the men who mentored me many, many years ago. I like doing it. I'm comfortable. But I don't read the manuscript. I essentially have it memorized. And I refer to it visually, so I'll look at a paragraph, or if I'm if I'm making a particularly uncomfortable point,
then I will just stare down at the page and not look at the people and just say what I've written and then come away from it.
Right.
But, you know, it's not a bad thing to be careful about what you're saying, particularly if it's important. And in your case, in your business producing videos, it's very important. That's your livelihood.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want to be just saying stupid stuff.
No.
Randomly. Bob, do you think the Bible says anything about voice? Anything come to mind that the scriptures illustrate or allude to or even tell us to use?
It tells us to live a quiet life. One of my favorite verses is, you know, to mind your own business and work with your hands and, you know, it's in one of the first or second Thessalonians, I can't remember. But it does tell us to control our tongue and how...
That certainly impacts voice then.
Right. And that's being thoughtful about what you say.
What do you think Paul means when he says, let your speech be seasoned as with salt?
Mm-hmm. Well, salt adds a lot of flavor and it's pleasant normally, unless you... Super salt,
I think
something.
That's an allusion to voice,
yeah.
Myself.
Yeah.
Not just vocabulary, that's part of it, you know, me not using the term pissed off if I'm speaking to someone that I know would be offended by that phrase, is being careful and gesturing a kind thing at them, but it also has to do with tone of voice, mm-hmm. which, and then, you know, it's interesting because the Bible says a lot about the voice of God, and... Of course, we're mystified by that. What would when the Father spoke at Jesus' baptism, what did that voice sound like? This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. Or when the Father spoke on the Mount of Transfiguration, saying the same thing to Peter. This is my beloved Son in whom I am well pleased. Hear ye him. The King mm-hmm. James. I don't think the Father spoke in King James, actually.
No.
But so the voice of God is a thing to pay attention to in the Bible. Now, what the implications of that are, I don't know, but we are created in his image, and we communicate by our voice. My stepfather-in-law, whom I love a lot, who's 90 years old, he has... a disability and has had for a number of years with his voice.
Mm-hmm.
He had surgery on his voice box or his throat, and that has permanently affected how he speaks. And that has taught me to appreciate our voice
mm-hmm.
and not take it for granted.
Right.
Sometime may come when we don't have a voice like we once had.
Yeah. You reminded me of... one of the most powerful things I ever witnessed was when I was in a church one time, and two handicapped people, vocally handicapped people,
mm-hmm.
Down syndrome type, you know, or retarded. I know these are not the politically correct terms to use, but I'm at a loss here, but... they get up during the time for special singing, and they sang El Shaddai.
Hmm.
And it was so moving. I don't think there was a dry eye in that church when it was over. I mean, would they ever play it on the radio or anything? You know, did Amy Grant have to worry about somebody, you know, scooping her song or anything like that? No, but...
Right.
Probably the best version I've ever heard of that song.
Was it because you were touched by their voice?
I was touched by the sincerity of it. And
despite not having sterling voices.
Right.
Interesting.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So voice in itself, while important, it's also the message. It's also the feeling behind it. It's also the commitment and the belief behind it. If a salesman really believes in his product, he's going to show that in the way he communicates that
I've been approached recently by a financial planner that's a nice man, and I like him, and I don't know that I'll ever use his services. I might. I don't know. But I've noticed he has a very careful voice.
Mm-hmm.
He's very, very careful. He's a man in his 40s, and he's not from New England originally. But I've noticed he's very careful,
mm-hmm.
and I picked that up. I thought, you know what? I appreciate that, particularly when we're discussing something touchy like finance. You know, carefulness in voice
mm-hmm.
Is a sign of some maturity, yeah. I think.
And one is not better than the other because, I like hearing, and especially with pastors, and I think there are a lot of pastors out there, or at least a lot of preaching that I have heard, that it's been kind of, you know, like it's scripted and read and there's not a whole lot of passion in it. And I think that hurts the cause of Christ. But if it's a deliberate speaking, a thoughtful speaking, I like that. By the same token, I could go to a church the next week or listen to a speaker the next week who uses a lot of humor and is, you know, all over the place walking around the stage. And that is also very appealing. And it's not that one is better than the other. It's just, you know, it's just like some people like caviar and some people like, you know, Jello. I don't know.
I was going to go with Doritos.
Doritos, okay.
It was the opposite of caviar to me. So, you know, another, maybe we'll end with this lighter note too, is another aspect of voice that I pay attention to and I notice is how people laugh. There are some people whose laugh is just wonderful. And I really note that in my own mind. There's people, we all have a unique way of laughing. Mm-hmm. And laughing, of course, is nothing but voice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then there's other people that have absolutely shrill, you know, completely annoying ways of laughing. And man, you just want to hit the door when they start laughing, you know. I know a person that has a very nervous and a very overpowering laugh, and man, they punctuate almost every. They could be saying to you that they think you're a horrible person, you're a worthless waste of protoplasm, and then they laugh, and you're confused by that because when someone has a powerful nervous laugh, they're signaling you this is a funny moment, this is a light moment, but they're calling you scum,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they're making fun of the. It's just weird, it's confusing, and there's some people around that do that with their laughs.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Bob, you're just really a waste of time. You know, I don't like anything. I don't like anything that you say. Isn't that funny? You know, you're sitting there being shredded, and we're supposed to be laughing about it. That's confusing, yeah. You know. But then there's people that I just almost want to tickle them just to hear them laugh because they have a great laugh.
Yeah.
And everybody's unique. In our staff at church, we do a lot of laughing. And it isn't planned, you know. It's now it's 10:14. Now it's time to laugh, you know. No, but it just happens. We poke fun at each other. We tell funny stuff to each other. We find the body, the life of the body, just humorous sometimes, and mm-hmm. we do a lot of laughing. And I like listening to everybody's laugh around me. But I think voice is a significant thing. I'm not sure I'd call it important, but I would call it a significant thing. That when you start paying attention to how we use voice or don't use it, you start noticing that this comes up in a lot of people's lives. Like, you know, you've heard the classic illustration, how we say, I love you. I love you communicates one thing. I love you. I love you, you know. Mm-hmm. It's all about the voice, communicating completely different messages. Yeah. Anyway, I'm interested in the subject of voice, and I'm sure you'll be thinking about it more now, won't you?
I will.
Yeah.
Although I do think, I think a lot about voice.
Do you?
Yeah.
Well, you're in the business as far as video goes, yeah. And your daughter's voice is an interesting voice to me. I find that when I'm around her, particularly in a group, when she'll contribute a thought, like in a class or something, you know, when she speaks up, it's like people, well, what's she going to say? You know, she has some command in how she, and control in how she uses her voice, and I think that's an advantage, you know. I don't know if it makes any difference in the nursing field or in the, you know, in the factory field or wherever people might go, but there are a lot of lines of work where voice is pretty significant, I think, yeah. So, okay, folks, you've joined us on Coffee Break. I'm Neil Damgard here with Bob Perrin, who works with South Coast Multimedia, and we're glad you've joined us today.